Hey, grandkids, welcome to OPA 33.
33, double threes.
Yep. I like that. It was a favorite of mine in childhood. As mentioned before, I was not fully on the Steelers bandwagon. I was a Joe Montana fan. One of his main running backs, number 33, Roger Craig. First guy, 1,000 yards rushing, 1,000 yards receiving.
You know what? I feel like the number 33 pops up a lot. Because that was the year 1933, the year the Steelers were founded, the aforementioned Pittsburgh Steelers. Although I think they were the Pirates that first year, if I'm not mistaken.
You are correct.
Yeah. But famously bought with winnings from a horse race by founder Art Rooney. But
gambling is no longer allowed around the NFL.
Right, that's not cool anymore. And no one would ever gamble on the NFL game anyway. I mean, what are you talking about?
Yeah, who would do any craziness like that?
33 also, wasn't that the number that was on Rolling Rock beer?
Yes.
Just sort of mysteriously thrown on the label without explanation? Because it's not like a year number, right? It's just like...
It was just a 33.
33, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, good gravy. I have not had Rolling Rock in... quite some time.
Yeah.
I would guess it still exists somewhere.
I think so. You don't really see it around here as much, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, that was like probably a craft beer before craft beer's time.
But that brand really took a hit, I feel like.
They got bought by somebody, and I don't feel like they kind of put the same emphasis into it.
Gotcha. Yeah, they probably just, you know... slapped a few labels on some of their other beers and called it a day. But also, of course, 33, the year or the age of our Lord when he was crucified. That's the other thing I wanted to throw in there. Because that's always a great way to start a show off, is to refer to the crucifixion. That's podcasting 101.
I do enjoy your now point of view pointing this out. You're trying to go back to Ken and Kevin back in grade school.
Oh, yeah. Well, we did go to Catholic school, and that's how I know that fact.
One of the few ones he paid attention to in the 12 years of Catholic schooling that he had.
Well, I would say I was definitely into it at the time. It's just became, I guess, less important. But I still remember that for some reason, because now I'm well beyond 33.
Yes.
And, haven't been crucified yet, which is, you know, I guess it's good. It's really, there's no downside to that.
No, there isn't. And there is a gentleman who happens to be a year our younger.
Sure.
Who is 37, who is...
also uncrucified, correct?
Also uncrucified.
All right. We feel like we got a lot of in common with this guy already.
Yep. He is Caucasian.
Okay.
So we have more in common with him.
That's true. He is...
One thing that we certainly do not have in common with him is our second job is podcasting. His second job, dumpster diving.
Professionally, right?
Yes. I did not realize that you could become a certified professional in dumpster diving. We might have to... call in I don't think we need to call in the sports experts for this one. He is a professional, but it is definitely not a sport.
So, okay, we can agree with that. There is no defense. Although it sounds like occasionally security can play a little defense, because he does a lot of his dumpster diving at, retail stores where they're throwing out, you know, merchandise basically.
Yeah, because when I first got into the article, I was just like, there's no way. And then he mentioned that he was raiding electronics stores, essentially. Their dumpsters.
Right. I think they mentioned Best Buy.
They mentioned pretty much everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
In this article, like, they had, like, tips. Like, there were other pros. He happens to be in Austin, Texas.
Right.
And there are other people like him, and they kind of tipped each other off about stuff, you know, dumpsters, and, like, where to find them, and what the, like, he got it down where he's, like, timing the dumpsters, like, when it's going to be most full.
Right.
When it's going to have the most useful items.
Right.
Before trash day comes, so that, he doesn't lose anything.
I was watching a documentary about Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and it reminded me a little bit of how they would plan for their bank robberies, because they would strike, like, when they had their payroll there, or, you know, whatever, some big deposit comes in. And it's basically the same thing, except this one is a legal version of that, apparently.
Yeah, he did say that occasionally there are, if it's fenced in, if the dumpster is fenced in, there are some posted no trespassing signs. And a couple other thing, one other thing, and I couldn't remember what it was, but most dumpsters, though, are available to be gone through.
They're just kind of not locked, you know, they're away from the building, you know.
Yeah, and he has a Chevy Avalanche, and he just uses the back end to kind of hoist himself, he just kind of backs up to it. So that he can get into the dumpster.
Yeah. It's a really, it is a cool article, because you're just, you know, jaw drops a little bit just to, when you realize all the stuff that he finds in this, in these dumpsters, like, that he's able to sell.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting that the one tip, that he got from one guy was get all the little items and don't get the big items. Like the paper and the toner and things of that nature, because it resells because people always need it. Like, right. The computers, people only need every so often, so they don't always sell as quickly.
Yeah.
But, man, he didn't care, though. Like, he got all kinds of stuff. Like, because he just pulled, like, he mentioned where he just pulled boards. Like, if just circuit boards were fine, he'd keep those and get rid of the rest of it, like, if it was that damaged, just so that he had parts to repair other, other more complete computers.
And I think that was kind of the key to this guy's success in some ways, because it sounds like he just, in general, has a whole bunch of, you know, material to work with. So, like, for instance, he found the little motorcycles, the people that you can ride, like the powered motorcycles that you can get on.
Yeah, because I think he found those at a Walmart dumpster.
Oh, yeah. So he found, like, I don't know, 20 of them or something like that?
Yeah, it's either 20 or 30.
That's just amazing that would be thrown in a dumpster.
And, and he said that one of the main problems with that, I believe there was a Walmart, but then he said that people just threw them out, too, because it runs on a battery. So right. As soon as the battery dies, it's just as cheap to get a new one, essentially. Like, the battery costs almost as much as the new buggy. So he knew how to put a new battery on it, and then he'd sell it for half. Well, he sells everything for half price. Like, he looks up the price. That seemed to be the general rule of thumb.
Yeah.
Is that just to sell it. And that's kind
of that makes a lot of sense, because then I think people are going to be like, oh, shit, okay, I'll buy this. Even, you know, whatever, you know, they don't, or it could be people who wouldn't be able to afford things otherwise, you know, so.
Right. I
mean, it's just a lot better that somebody is going through and finding this stuff and selling it rather than it's just being thrown out, you know. And it's good for him that he's making some money doing it, I think. You know?
Yeah, he said he was making $250,000 on the side, I believe.
Yeah, that may have been cumulative. Over a period of time, because I think he was doing it part time, but I want to say he was making like around $65,000 a year doing this.
Well, he's still doing it. Evidently, he has a big time job now, and he's still doing it on the side.
Right.
Like, he started it when he was making the $65,000, and that's the other thing. Like, this guy is super handy, being able to repair anything from motorcycles to laptops and desktops. He was doing, like, it sounded like carpentry work because he was getting MDF, like, he was getting different materials to cut up for different things. I mean, this guy was just generally very handy.
Right.
Which helps the situation, too. Like, most people aren't going to be able to turn this stuff out.
Right. And, like, and you know, like I said, too, he just sort of seemed to have all this stuff stored so that, like, oh, like, for whatever reason he had, in the case of the motorcycles, he had these emergency, like, exit like, batteries that would work with the motorcycles. So he would... Oh. They were rechargeable. So, yeah, like that. So he was basically able to turn that into working motorcycles for free to him because he just found this stuff, you know, in dumpsters. So that's huge. I mean,
yeah. And that's what it was, is he thought that he could make $250,000 a year just doing this.
Mm-hmm.
But the person that wrote the article was just with him for a couple of days. And with what he got in those couple of days, he sold it for $5,000.
Just for that stuff in the few days there.
Yeah. Yeah, in those few days. And he said if he worked a 5-day workday with 4 weeks of vacation, the writer was approximating that he could, you know, if this was a typical haul, that he can make $600,000 a year.
Right. And I guess that depends too. Like, was it maybe these are the days to hit the, you know, hit the dumpsters and the other days aren't as good, but you know,
yeah,
there's going to be some fluctuation, I would say.
I would imagine that there is some level of, flow, ebb and flow. Like, these companies can't be tossing stuff that frequently, like, where it's a weekly thing.
Yeah.
You might go from place to place each week, but that they didn't completely make clear either, though, like, how often he was hitting each location.
Yeah, but I mean, this just, the more I was reading the article, the more I was like, well, this seems like a totally, you know, not only, like, okay thing to do, but like it's really a good thing to do for you know, the environment and you know, society in general, it seems like.
Yeah, he is doing a whole lot of recycling.
Right.
A whole lot of recycling of large and small objects. And yeah, most people, they don't care. They do just want a cheap price. Like, they don't care if you know, if you found it refurbished, if it looks fine, it looks fine.
Yeah, if it works, fine.
If it works.
Yeah. I guess he was mentioning a trend of using trash compactors now. So, like, that's been kind of messing things up. Somebody was, I think one of the other collectors, I don't know. Divers.
Yeah, dumpster divers.
Well, that's the other thing, is like, that would not be the most pleasant thing to do. Like, you know, he's working there, crawling into these dumpsters, you know. He definitely is earning some money here.
yeah.
As well as the work to repair things and, you know, all that, but.
Right.
Gosh, I got myself off track there.
Yeah, well, I don't know what you were going for, so I can't really help you out aside from buying you a little bit of time.
Oh, come on, really? You can't tell me what I was going for?
Was it something about the trash compactor still?
Oh, right. Yeah, so one of the other pickers, I guess. I don't know. They he had mentioned that it used to be that he could go out behind a Walmart and find, you know, 20 kids' bicycles back there thrown away. But, you know, they've started to be environmentally friendly. They've started using a trash compactor to, like...
to reduce
the landfill space. Yeah,
yeah, the space.
But it's destroyed. Like, he would go there now and just see, like, all those, you know, bicycles just twisted up into little, you know, packets for the dumpster.
Right.
So that was kind of, you know, ironic there, in that Walmart, for all intents and, you know, in outside purposes, seems like they're trying to do a good thing with compacting the trash. And I know that they're also, you know, big into like LED lights and low energy lights and things like that.
Right.
But it just seems like a total perverse outcome there.
Yeah, for the dumpster divers, it is certainly not something that they want to happen.
Right. Well, and I would say...
And the people that buy from
them. In general, the people that buy from them, yeah, would not be happy about that. Yeah. and, you know, it's stuff that, you know, yes, it's taking up less space, but how about taking up zero space? I mean, that, I think, would be even better, so.
Yeah, zero space would be better.
I think.
Yeah. Although I don't think they're going to do zero.
Well, I'm saying...
I think that was kind of funny. Did they mention...
But I'm just saying, if you wouldn't have those bicycles in the trash, it could be, you know, somebody could be rewriting that instead of it being squished up in a little ball in a landfill. So that's the zero part.
I was kind of surprised that reaching zero waste to landfill by 2025 was what Walmart's goal is.
Yeah, that's pretty ballsy there.
Yeah, that's not all that far away, and that's a lot of stores to not have waste at.
You know what, though? I think that's probably where we would need to be in general with things, just because of, like, the amount of, you know, we need... Well, our system's set up, we need the economy to keep growing, and, like, to be able to, like, keep doing more stuff, it's going to continue to have more and more of an impact on the planet, unless we can... get that down to zero, you know, if that makes sense. But yeah, it is pretty ballsy.
it's quite a goal that Walmart set for themselves.
And for, you know, Walmart gets a lot of bad press for things, perhaps deservedly sometimes, but, you know, this is something that does definitely seem like they're trying to be on the right side of, but, still kind of
mucks the process up a little bit.
Bad things happening. Yeah.
And it'd be interesting to know how many people in the country do this type of thing. It certainly seems like it's more of a big city thing to do.
Yeah, I would say so, too.
You might be able to do this in a small city on a lesser scale, but it still seems like it's a better profession, let's say, when you're in a major city.
Oh, yeah. And you're going to have more customers, too, which would be
helpful as well. Yeah, that's kind of useful.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, I guess that puts me in mind of, like, maybe a city that's not such a major city. Maybe one that's, you know, more out of the way.
Oh, man. Going smooth. Smooth as a baby's bottom.
Right out of the gate. First segue. Nailed it. Yeah, this little town in West Virginia.
Greenbank, West Virginia is its name. And as this article mentions, it is the town without Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah. I think we forgot to mention the last article was a Wired article. And we'll have a link to it, but it's definitely worth checking out.
Yes, we will have a link to check out Matt Malone and his adventures in a dumpster.
Yeah, that's pretty. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
And this is a different article about this town without Wi-Fi, as the headline tells us.
Yeah, although it did sound, I was kind of laughing at the headline because it sounds like the kids in town have a workaround to not have Wi-Fi.
Yeah, I was trying to get some of that. It seems like they're having more and more trouble enforcing this rule here. Why would they have a rule in a town to not be able to have Wi-Fi? Not just Wi-Fi, but any kind of cell signal or radio communication. They're not allowed to have any kind of radio signals there.
There were so many funny things. The reason for the blackout in this area, or noise out in this area, is because there is a gigantic telescope there that is not used with your eyeballs.
Sure. It's not an eyeball telescope, folks.
Nope. It's used with your earballs.
Of course, an earball telescope.
Yep.
Also known as a, I want to say, electromagnetic telescope. But it basically picks up the electromagnetic waves that are coming in from outer space.
Yeah, I was trying to look for the exact name of the...
Sure. I mean, it's commonly known as an earball telescope, but there is a scientific name they give in the article. So it's very sensitive to be able to pick up these dim signals coming from, you know, stars however many light years away.
Right, and there's just things that you can explore with sound. And they use it as a sonar device, really, too, because they were tracking a satellite from there for NASA, they said, was one of the things that they were doing. And they have a whole little campus set up.
The scientists there.
For the scientists that live there. The city of Green Bank, I believe the population was 134.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not exactly a large city in any sense of the word.
No, I'm guessing you probably wouldn't have much success as a professional dumpster diver in Green Bank.
Yeah, I would say that's square out. Yeah. Especially since a lot of the technology that he was rescuing is not allowed.
That's the other problem, yeah. You couldn't even sell it to anybody if you did find it for some reason.
Right.
You really then wouldn't find it anyway.
You would have to ship it somewhere to sell it.
Yeah, that's just a pain.
I found it kind of ironic that there was a ham radio group in town.
Yeah, that was somehow legal. Like, that part didn't really make sense to me. But it sounds like they have people that kind of go around with detectors to, like, find these rogue signals.
Yeah, and one of the rogue signals was a dog that had chewed through an electric blanket.
Oh, yeah, like, and chewed through the insulation.
Yeah, chewed through the wiring.
And that was enough to send out, like, a leaked signal that they were able to pick up on.
Right. So, I mean, this wasn't, like, something that was major that was emitting. Like, they found an electric blanket.
Yeah.
That had gone south.
So
that's some pretty sensitive material if something like that is throwing off the telescope.
Yeah, if that is what we're talking about. So, yeah, I've seen those signs where, you know, you can't use your, please don't use your cell phone, it's going to mess up our equipment. But I kind of doubt that most of the time. But in this case, it does sound like they actually do need it to be, because the signals are so very faint that are coming in to the telescope.
Right. And they were even saying that a regular vehicle cannot come into town. They have to have diesel vehicles.
Oh, yeah.
Because the spark plugs emit enough of a frequency that everything's got to be diesel.
Man.
Like, I mean, that's how subtle some of these sounds were. Like, that was just really incredible to me.
Yeah, just imagine, like, I mean, obviously they picked this place because it is out of the way. I get the picture is kind of surrounded by mountains in a way. And
right, because that was the other thing, is that some of the towns, I think the closest town with a cell signal was 26 miles away, and it was only okay because it was on another side of a mountain, and the satellite tower was facing the other direction.
Right, so it wouldn't, that signal's blocked from over there then.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so that would be, but it would be so strange to live there and not to be able to, like, you know, have a cell phone or, you know, I kind of feel like a wireless connection is almost, you know, the new having a phone line.
Yeah, I know that things are pretty common, at least in my opinion, when my parents have it.
Yeah.
And my parents have a Wi-Fi modem. If it's slow, but it's Wi-Fi. So I mean, if they've gone to it, it's a lot of places usually in my mind.
Sure. And Midge and Ron are not necessarily on the bleeding edge of technology advancements.
No, they are not.
So yeah, it's out there in the world. That would be a big pain.
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting. Just because I've driven through West Virginia a number of times to get down to either my brother or sister's place in Virginia itself, there's a lot of traveling through West Virginia that you do. And the place where this Green Bank is really is the middle of nowhere. Like, there's not a major road anywhere near it. And the zone is, I was trying to remember, like, I believe it's, I'm trying to think of how big the blackout zone is here. But it's an entire zone, but there aren't that many major roads around it. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere, about as the middle of the nowhere as you can get. And that was the purpose of it when they first built it. Is it was extra quiet out there.
Right. It's so
So,
far away from everything.
right.
But still, there are some people that live there. Like, that would be, I don't know. It would just be pretty weird. But then I guess they found that there was a kind of a new group of people that were, you know, showing up besides kind of the original old timers that were, I don't want to say old timers, the people who had lived there for generations, you know, in their family. You know, they had to deal with that. And I guess they probably are annoyed by that in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting just because this article really was more based around these people called electrosensitives.
Who have seeking out this is seeking, is that a word?
Sought.
Sought out, yeah, that's what I was looking for. They have sought out this place for its lack of electric signals
Yeah,
because
'cause.
they're sensitive to that, they say.
Yeah, there's all kinds of different maladies that come from this, from just perpetual headaches to there was one person, well, not too surprisingly, there was a bit of a clash of cultures with the new people coming in, the electrosensitives coming in to this little town. And this one woman was given a speech about it, and one guy forgot to turn off his cell phone, and she came up to the other people in attendance and showed like these big welts that she had gotten on her arms because the guy had had his cell phone on.
And then I think she was like, yeah, hey, if somebody has their cell phone on, can we get this turned off?
Right.
So that to me was probably the most convincing part of somebody demonstrating that they actually, because I guess, you know, it sounds like the doctors are not on board with this actually being a thing at this point.
Right. It is not officially a thing yet.
Right.
These people have sought each other out and have not that all of them gone there, but at least some have gone there to this area to try and cure their malady.
Now, it's interesting that, to me, that you said that, not surprisingly, there was conflict between the electrosensitive newcomers and the legacy people that lived there for a long time. What made you think that there's inherent conflict there?
Just because I lived in a very similar area to this for most of the time that I grew up, and I would imagine they're even a little more hillbilly than what you might find in your regular Altoona resident.
Okay. All right. So you're just being stereotypical hillbilly West Virginian here.
Yeah, I am.
All right.
There is a reason they're stereotypes. It's because those type of people do exist.
But I guess I was thinking, like, okay, these people, they want to go somewhere where there's no electric signals, right?
Correct.
No Wi-Fi, no radios, no cell phones. That's what they want. this place already has these rules where this stuff is not allowed there. So, like, it seems like, why would there be a problem?
Well, Ken, since you're trying to get me to talk about more of the story, they had a problem with the people. There aren't that many stores in town. There's one general store, a post office.
But there was people that were using these electronics, right? Or there was lights that were
there were them. Fluorescent lights that yeah. they had requested to be replaced. There were other signals in town and other electronic devices that weren't necessarily radio signals that were causing these people problems. And they ended up, some people ended up fighting over it.
Yeah, okay.
I just always, A, there's always some level of conflict. And B, there's also the, when you start reading about this problem that may or probably seems to exist.
Yeah, I mean, these people seem to be suffering from something. I mean, I don't know. It, you know, it could be psychosomatic, I suppose, or...
Right.
But, you know, I don't think they're having a good time about this whole situation.
No, and it does. It seems like everyone in general that had this problem seemed okay with their lives. Like, no one was just like, oh, I had a horrific life where I was at. It was just that this problem was driving them so crazy there. They felt like they needed to seek this out as a solution.
And it did seem to make a difference for people, so...
Right, even the people that left after being there for a while seemed to think that it was worth going there, that it helped their problem.
I guess I like the idea that a place like this exists, that it's kind of like, you know, a quiet zone, almost like a national park or something, you know, like... this is the way, you know, things used to be almost. Not that, but it's like most people can't tell, I guess. Or, you know, maybe we'll come to find out there is a, you know, it's affecting everybody and we'll all go to some place like this.
The whole U.S. becomes, what was that terrible show that I stopped watching where all the electronics got fried?
Yeah.
Whatever. I don't really care.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Revolution.
There you go.
But, it's kind of cool. Like, I don't mind not paying attention to my stuff sometimes. Despite using it a decent chunk, there are other times that I just don't really pay attention because it's not worth paying attention to. Like, you need to kind of get off of it. I try to do it now, like, even now, I'm setting aside at least a half an hour before I go to bed to kind of do a little cleanup on my body, not look at an electronic screen, which I'm looking at pretty much all day.
Right. Yeah, I know what you mean. It's because that blue light is supposed to wake you up more, you know, put your body into thinking it's daylight.
Right.
Which makes me think, hey, let's get rid of these blue lights. You know? Can't we put a different color light bulb in there?
Yeah, light.
Get to work on this, all right? Good Lord.
Technology people, help us out here.
So yeah, we solved that one.
It was really pretty interesting listening to these people. I mean, I guess the other reason you were talking to, or you mentioned to me why I thought that there'd be a conflict. There's always going to be people when they hear about a new problem that are just going to say that it's bullshit.
Yeah, I mean,
no matter what the problem is, it'll end up getting accepted in the long run, but at the initial. It's going to be like, dude, you've got to be fucking kidding. Especially if it's down to, okay, we don't have Wi-Fi, we don't have cell signals. Like, it's already pretty limited. Like, really? The fluorescent light is doing it to you?
Right.
Like, motherfucker, no. Like, this is the way that it is. You have a damn problem.
Well, I just wonder, like, okay, where are they asking for this to be fixed at? Like, at a store? Like, because it seems like it may not be this, like, the store may not be legally, like, obligated to change the light because you asked them to.
Oh.
I'm not sure what the laws are, but it seems to me that that's the case.
It just seemed like in this situation that they decided to oblige the problem that the person was having and did replace the lighting. But you're right. There is really no legal... If it's not a real disease, you're not going to have any legal grounding to say, hey, we need to change out this light. Like, it's not like the ADA code... You know, where you've got to make sure that you have the turnaround space and you have this much space to open a door, so on and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, the store has no reason to actually do it except for common courtesy.
Well, I mean, the common courtesy runs up against, you know, common currency. And it's a... You know, it's hard to justify spending money, you know, on something that you weren't going to spend money on just because people would prefer it that way. I mean, I can just imagine a situation that it would be tough to justify. So, I don't know.
You can imagine the situation in this situation?
Yeah, I imagine the situation in all of our topics. I just normally don't bring it up.
Would this situation be better with the situation? I think we have a new gimmick.
But, yeah, so, like, these electrosensitive people, good luck to them. I still don't, you know, necessarily know why there's an inherent conflict here. maybe you can get somebody to do your shopping for you. I don't know.
Yeah, that was kind of the other thing. It was just like, you know... I don't know. Have someone deliver it to you.
Yeah, maybe that would be a good... Hey, store owner, as a gesture of goodwill, maybe...
I'll throw in an extra sawbuck and everything will be okay.
Yeah, you got to pay a little delivery fee, but you can offer somebody to go out to their house and bring them their food. That sounds good.
Yep. Well, the electrosensitives...
Sure.
Would certainly not want to go to a new hotel that is being built in Japan.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, what makes this hotel a place where they would not want to go to?
Well, part of the staff is going to be robots.
Right.
They are not only robots, but they are kind of like mannequin robots. Like, they are trying to make them look like real people.
That can pick up on your facial expressions, you know, interact with you in 5 languages, I think they said?
Yeah, 5 languages. Which is pretty crazy. I mean, it's like you have C-3PO, almost. Fluent in Chinese, Japanese, Korean, and English.
Oh, wait, I guess that's only 4. Okay, that's not that impressive, then. Only 4.
Yeah, I mean, how many does C-3PO know?
I think it was thousands, if I'm not mistaken. He was a protocol droid, of course, so that's kind of his thing. But, yeah, these so there will also be some human staff as well, but you'll be checked in by a robot. The robots can make coffee. Did they say... I don't know if they said change the sheets or not, but it sounded like the kind of general purpose robot that, and I'm sure there's limitations that they're glossing over here in this article.
Well, they did say that there is going to be human people there, but they were hoping to get to a 90. Their goal is to get to 90%. Robot staff, but it's a little bit higher than that currently, or at least that's the way it seemed to me. In the future, we'd like more than 90% of the hotel services. They didn't say at the present moment how many of the staff were going to be robots.
Yeah. Well, it sounded like a significant portion would be robot staff.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy. And the thing that I found really crazy is that, oh, yeah, those robots do kind of look weirdly human, don't they?
I looked up that earlier in the day, and they were kind of creepy because they had, like, the model touching it. It's like, you know, going to a wax museum where you're kind of touching yourself in the wax museum. Like, I mean, I'm not in a wax museum, but...
You would touch yourself in the wax museum?
Yes.
This is news to me.
Yep, I would touch myself.
It's just like, you know, that song, basically.
I touch myself, yep. Yeah. Just like that.
So yeah, it's a strange concept, I guess. God damn it! I feel like there was something I was going to say about it.
So did I, which is why I went into look mode. I was like, oh, he can carry it for a little bit, no big deal. I was a little surprised that the hotel was going to be as cheap as it was.
That's it. That's what I was going to say.
Because it was only going to be $60 a night. Which is pretty goddamn cheap.
Right, and I think things are pretty expensive. I mean, at least that's what I've heard. In was this in Tokyo? Or some kind of
out-of-the-way place? It was, again, in a park. Like, an amusement park in Nagasaki.
Nagasaki.
Huh. Yeah. Because I loved how it was in the Netherlands-themed... Hoos Ten Bosch amusement park.
Oh, so you maybe already have to pay to get into the amusement park? Kind of a Disney situation? Or
Well, you don't need to... Those are two separate things at Disney. You can stay on their property, but the hotel fees are different from your pass. I don't know if you get savings on your pass fee. I'd have to look into that part, I guess. Since I didn't buy the ticket, I'm not completely sure. But
interesting.
I think they're separate prices.
Well, if anyone out there has gone to this robot hotel...
Oh, they did say 10 humanoid robots.
Oh, 10 of them?
Yeah.
This must not be that big of a hotel.
It's 72 rooms.
72?
Yeah, it is not that big.
Well...
Yeah, so there's one of the robots.
Yeah, see, that's pretty weird looking. Because why with the human hands? I hope they put clothes on.
I do hope they put clothes on.
It's just kind of like a skeleton almost.
Yeah, this was the one that was creeping me out. That is definitely the model for this one. And it does look better with clothing on.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, no, it's a... pretty realistic looking, I would say.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy because that one was really creeping me out too.
Oh, yeah,
the red haired Japanese woman.
Yeah, it's I wonder how they would look in motion. You know, because sometimes you see like the weird, like it kind of reminds you of like a Chuck E. Cheese. animatronic experience a little bit.
Yeah, I still think that there's some work before we need to worry about the androids taking us over.
We're not there yet. You're right.
Not there yet. maybe in our lifetimes, maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe John Connor will come around.
Man, I can't believe they're making a new movie for the Terminator. That's pretty crazy.
Of course they would. I mean, if there is a franchise that can be milked, it will be milked.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Yep. So I can't wait until this hotel spawns some type of story about animatronics gone wild. It's gonna smother you in your sleep.
Yeah. That would be disturbing. So I hope that doesn't happen.
Well, one way for them not to strangle you.
Yes. Please tell me.
Would be if you had an invisibility cloak on.
Well, I guess that makes sense. Yeah, but they're. we couldn't really have an invisibility cloak, Evan. I mean,
really, Ken? Do you think that there is not the chance for us to have an invisibility cloak?
I mean, I've seen Harry Potter, and you know, he had an invisibility cloak, but
yeah,
that was just a movie, Kevin.
He also had a Patronus, and I know that you have a Patronus, Ken.
Well, yes, of course. I mean, right, that's different. But
what is your Patronus, Ken?
It is a horned toad, my Patronus.
Ah, mine, yeah. Dingo.
A dingo, oh. Wow.
Yeah, that is definitely my Patronus. But, you know what? We might be a little bit more like Harry Potter because there is a field of science that is working on an invisibility cloak.
Yes, this article was kind of blowing my mind.
And not to jump too far to the end there, but the scientist that's working on it thinks that he will have it figured out by the end of his lifetime.
Right, yeah. I mean, we talk about it a lot on the show about how kind of we're living in the future, sort of some of the things that would have seemed science fiction to us as a in our younger days, I guess.
Yeah, in our St. Mary's days, it would have looked to us like it was from the future. It might not be the Jetsons. Might not be in flying cars, but...
Yeah, there was a blog post I read where this guy was talking about how, I forget what he termed it as, but like, you could think of it as like the period of time it would take to blow someone's mind if you took them in a time machine, like that far in the future. And how that has gotten shorter and shorter, over time.
Gotcha.
Because for like most of history, like, people were farmers or whatever, you know, things stayed the same, basically, generation after generation. So, like, it would be, you know, maybe, well, in the early history, thousands of years would pass with really no
change technological to life. Advances.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crazy, because I do think about that from time to time. The Romans were, like, one of the first groups to have running water with the aqueducts and things of that nature, and it's just, like, that was... had to have been a mind fuck to have fresh water from miles and miles away, like at that time.
Sure, that would have let them to build up some big cities and things that they, you know, wouldn't have been possible before. Then that would have introduced whole new, like, you know, social problems and things to deal with too, you know.
Yes, it certainly did.
So, you know, it's the same way with any technology, I guess, but it's just... it just does seem to be happening faster and faster. Like, you know, you wouldn't have to wait, you know, thousands of years to blow somebody's mind by showing them something.
No, that's why I always kind of laugh. I like the show Sleepy Hollow. And in the show, this gentleman died in the Civil War, but he has been reborn 300 years later. In current society to help fight off demons from hell.
As that happens, yes.
Yeah, it's the he's helping to fight off the four horsemen.
Oh.
Because one of the four horsemen happens to be one of his former friends in the Patriot Army, who turned on to be a redcoat later.
Wow, so that's... he was reborn in the sense that he just reappeared one day?
Correct. Like, he had some calling.
So he didn't actually... wasn't really born, necessarily, as a right. baby and grew up.
Yes. We did not have anything going on like that. He just kind of reappeared in time.
Got it.
Now he got out of purgatory without having any aging or anything of that nature.
Oh, okay. Wow. Good deal for him, I guess.
Yeah, but I just always think about how much of a mind fuck that'd be having to get used to our technology. I mean, they certainly bring it up I think that it would be a lot less. I don't feel like anyone would understand it that well. Like if you brought them back from the Civil War times, and I always think about it with Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Sure.
I think that maybe they acted a little more towards their nature in Bill and Ted's actually.
You mean
Genghis Khan attacking things and using aluminum baseball bats as weapons?
Right. Yeah. Except
Napoleon being upset about the idea of raiding Russia, and now everyone was telling him it was a bad plan.
Right. It's not going to work. I think it was, yeah, Bill was telling him. No, Ted, sorry.
Yeah, I believe.
That was Keanu. that was a great role for him.
Yes, it was.
But, yeah, I think you could almost take someone from the 80s and bring them to now and their minds will be blown, you know. It maybe not, but then again, maybe not, you know. It's like we don't have some of the big things that you would expect. Like, you know, flying cars, obviously. That apparently was what people were expecting. And
yeah, in the flying jetpack, also, it's been a thing. But there hasn't been any way to commercialize that.
Yeah.
It does not seem like a useful device. And
oh, it's crazy dangerous, for one thing.
Well, George Jetson took one from time to time, damn it.
That's true. Well, I think he had probably a different model than what we've got right now. They had a little bit more advanced. They definitely had the flying cars there in the Jetsons.
Yeah, and it made a lot less noise. And I don't know, maybe they had a lot of pollution, which was why they were up above the ground. I don't remember why they said they were off the ground all the time.
I don't know, but I swear I remember them having to raise it for pollution at one point.
Oh, okay, that was actually why they did that.
And I swear I remember them showing at one point the ground, and there was like a homeless guy living down there or something like that. I wonder what's going on with the Jetsons. Like, you know, we see probably just one part of this world, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The one percenters up there in their cities in the sky.
There's some things I'd love to rewatch that I just haven't rewatched in ages, and now that I'm thinking about that, it'd be kind of funny to watch that. Because the other Jetsons joke that I remember is always from Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, where they wanted to sue someone, and I forget why exactly, but they're like, oh, we have food that we can just push a button and it'll be done. He goes, yep, and you hear a microwave ding and he pulls out, you know, a meal.
So I do remember that. It was like all the different
yeah, it was like some of the different things that they had in the Jetsons. It was like, yes, we have them, they're in a slightly different form, but we have this stuff.
It's basically the same kind of thing. Yeah. That is true. I remember Back to the Future, they had like a little pill or something that they put in the oven and it turned into a pizza. I don't know if you remember that one.
I didn't remember that one.
We're not there yet for the pizza pill yet. But that just seems ridiculous. I mean, it violates the laws of physics as I understand them.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go with a take and bake pizza over a pizza pill.
I got you.
If it's pre-made and all I need to do is heat that puppy up, that's a win-win.
That's good enough. It doesn't need to be a little pellet-sized thing. But, yeah, this is kind of something that blew my mind in terms of the future coming along.
And they used English words in this article.
Yes.
But I'm not completely sure I understood the whole concept of what was going on, to be completely honest.
Right. And some of the, I guess, you know, maybe you guys would be able to understand this better than us, but some of the takeaways I had was that they found this material that will refract light but it has like a negative refraction. So,
right,
it looks like it's bent and you know, it like kind of bends the light back, I guess.
I do believe that was the general concept.
In order to make basically something made out of this material invisible. So you can imagine the invisible jet, I guess, would be from Wonder Woman.
Yes, it would have to be covered in a material similar to this.
Except maybe if we would have an invisible drone today, I would imagine. That would be...
Well, and I would hope if we had an invisible jet these days, you wouldn't just see Wonder Woman up there sitting in it.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Like, if she's in the jet and the jet's invisible, why isn't she invisible?
I don't know. So, I hope... well, what was his name was Zin of... Ho Zin. He was an electrical and computer engineering professor at the University of Arizona. Was the gentleman that is coming up with this technology.
Yeah, I always love these new materials. You know, it's very exciting to me when somebody kind of figures out a new something that you can make stuff out of.
Yeah, and I loved how it's called a meta material.
That's just cool, right?
Yeah, I mean, it just already sounds cool right off the bat.
But apparently, another thing I picked up on is they're going to be able to use it to make microscopes that can see, like, much smaller than what we are currently able to be able to see.
Yeah, that was pretty mind-blowing to... Because, I mean, I think that microscopes are pretty powerful these days. But one would imagine that if they're building that kind of thing, maybe they can build a better telescope out of it.
Right, somehow down the line, yeah.
Right, with the technology that comes about.
And, you know, I could see, I guess, the appeal of, you know, an invisible suit for, you know, fun and profit, but...
Yeah, I mean, it'd just be like shooting fireballs out of your hand. I mean, it'd be kind of fun.
Oh, man, you combine that with the fireballs? Now you're talking. Although that does kind of eliminate some of the benefits of the suit when you can see fireballs shooting out of air. But I don't know.
Yeah, well,
you still have to have the presence of mind to kind of put it together that, oh, wait, there's somebody standing there shooting fireballs that I can't see. Like, you may just be sort of... you know,
it'd be a little bewildering. Yeah. I would have to think.
That's a lot to try to put together, you know. Wait, fireballs, nothing's there. What?
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to be looking for that.
Right, that's not something that someone's going to have a lot of experience with, I think, in their lifetime. They're not going to be like, oh yeah, that's happening again, right?
Oh,
but
man.
You know what is happening again? We've come into the end of our show, Kevin.
Yep, and it is time for the Sippy Time Beer of the Week. This week, Epic Brewing out of Utah, and and I need to grab the name because I don't remember the exact name, because it was a Blue Paw Porter, I believe. Let me...
there can't be a lot of breweries in Utah, you would think.
Oh, Blue Law Porter. And it's brewed with blackberries and spruce tips from the Utah prevalent spruce tree.
I find it to be quite tasty.
Yeah, it is very good. It is very... It's much heavier on the blackberry flavor than it is on the spruce. You just get the spruce, a little bit on the back end is a little bit of a bitter note.
Yeah, the blackberries up front, it almost has like a reddish color to it, the beer itself. And it's the porterness of it is very smooth, and it mixes with the berries very nicely.
Yeah, it isn't one of the thicker porters that I've had, but it's still pretty smooth.
Yeah. It does the job. I am giving it all thumbs up.
Okie doke. Well, at Gozer33, at DeFrango11, at StuntGranny, and as usual with that information for the beer, hashtag SippyTimeBeer. Grandkids, have a good night.
Later.